For Theater Talk on WBFO, I'm Anthony Chase.
And I'm Peter Hall.
And Peter, our guest this morning is Jonathan Young. Young actor, right out of the gate, out of college, arrived in New York, did the showcases, all kinds of attention, agent, offers, COVID.
Thud.
Welcome, Jonathan.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you this morning?
Good. So tell us about the journey you've had. You went to Baldwin Wallace for their well-known and highly regarded musical theater program, right?
Yeah. I got my bachelor's of music from their conservatory there in musical theater. Graduated in 2017 and came to the city and sort of did the thing. Showcase happened, signed with an agent. He was going in for a lot of musicals, a lot of Broadway shows, a lot of national tours, some TV, and steadily sort of chipping away at that audition grind. And yeah, and then COVID happened, and my story is not unique in that way, in that like it's sort of, you slam on the brakes, and it just decimated the industry. So things got pretty scary.
You had done an American in Paris at a venerable dinner theater in Westchester, which loves to put up the names of all of the people who became famous subsequent to working there, and it has gone belly up. The whole, it's closed during COVID. It's gone.
Yeah, Westchester Broadway Theater is sort of an old New York institution, or New York adjacent institution, and they were one of the many casualties. They announced pretty early that they wouldn't be able to financially recover from this.
Wow.
And now it's being torn down and turned into a warehouse.
Horrible.
Can I push back a little, though? You kind of made it sound awful easy, you know, went to the showcase, tell us what that is, and then got an agent. Come on.
it certainly wasn't. So the culmination of 4 years at any musical theater program is usually a showcase where the class will come to New York and invite people from the industry to come and see what we've been working on. And it's a big deal for the students, certainly. And for agents, it's sort of scoping out the hot new talent. These are young kids who have been training to do this, and agents and casting directors and managers come from around the city, and there's sort of a feeding frenzy, right, on the young talent that's coming into the city, and everybody's trying to get a piece of it.
And your showcase was at 54 Below. It was a rather high profile. Baldwin Wallace gets attention. There are a few programs that get more attention than other programs.
Some are more equal than others.
Yeah, well, we have a sort of an alumni night that's at 54 Below. Our showcase itself is actually at New World Stages. I think it's like 150-seat theater, something like that. It's about the size of your musical fair. We do 4 performances, and most days it's full, and it's really scary and fun to look out and see 100 or so people with folders full of headshots and writing and scribbling. And if you're paying attention, you can sort of see when the pens start to move very fast and when people sort of start to look at their phones, and it's very daunting.
So some guy with a fat cigar comes up and says, Hey, kid,
you want to be a star?
And you go, yeah, no, yes?
Some are like that. I had some interviews with some old school agents who sort of were very like old New York agents who is, you know, I could blow a lot of smoke up your ass, kid, but I don't want to do that. You know, that kind of thing. For me, it was, they have your contact information. They'll reach out to you and call you in for a meeting. And after that, for a lot of kids, it's your first or one of your first times in the city, and you suddenly have an Excel spreadsheet of 15 different offices that you need to go to in 2 days and find out where they are. And thank God for Google Maps, because you're sort of plotting all over that. This was back in the time of in-person interviews. And so you're sort of running all over the city, running over all over Midtown, meeting with these people for these 30-minute, sometimes 45-minute meetings where you kind of say the same thing over again. And they ask you what you want from an agent, and you tell them what you think you bring to the table as a client, and then you sort of make your pick, if you get offers.
If you get offers.
Yes.
And you got several. You got an unusually large number, did you not?
I did well, yeah. I had about maybe a dozen, something like that, maybe 15. So yeah, but it's, you know, and it feels great. It's a huge ego boost. It feels amazing. At the end of the day, it's a huge problem because you can only pick one.
Right.
And so you have a lot of, you're doing a lot of calling to friends of yours who are signed with these people, or casting directors who you know, and saying, what's your take on so-and-so?
Or in your case, you're going, hello, my name is Jonathan Young.
Yeah, there you go. That was an early one. So, yeah, I mean, it's a real trip. It was a real whirlwind of 2 weeks, and finally you settle. And then the funniest part is after you make your decision and you go back to school then for the last 2 weeks of school, where you've done the thing, you've gone to showcase, you've signed with your agent, you're getting auditions for videos, and, you know, you have to take finals or sit through graduation or pack up your apartment in Ohio. And like, there's so much momentum, and it just feels so funny to go back and have to sit in a lecture again after all that.
Right. It's like, hey, I got an agent. I'm out of here.
A real tease. Yeah.
So this whole big buildup, working, promises of more work. And so then the world disappears. So what we're arriving at is that you began, had you been drawing cartoons already, you began to draw lots of cartoons.
So I've always drawn a little bit, and usually it was goofy things that I would send to my friends, things like that. It was always something I would do when I was bored. I was a big doodler in class. Then I started getting a little bit more serious about them. And so I made an Instagram account called Jonathan's Little Comics, and I started posting my cartoons. And I was told, and have since learned, that Jonathan's Little Comics is a misnomer, since what I'm actually drawing are cartoons, not comics. Comics have multi-panels, and most of mine are one single, what are called gag panels in the biz. So I've been reading The New Yorker for a couple of years, and I've always loved those cartoons and how sort of wry and dry they are. And that really spoke to me, so I started submitting. And after you submit them and The New Yorker says thank you for your submission, no thank you, you are free to post them anywhere then. The New Yorker sort of gets first offer, and then it's open season, so you can do whatever you want with them. So I have yet to get in The New Yorker. It's funny, there's a real, real parallel between auditioning and submitting cartoons anywhere. I have a couple friends who are New Yorker cartoonists, and what they always say is, well, you know, it's sort of a numbers game. You just have to keep submitting, and if you're good enough, it'll happen, but you have to be persistent about it, which is sort of a copy and paste from what any actor will tell you who's made it about auditioning.
Right, but which also scares you, I think, because you know for a fact, you know from experience, that some very talented people never get hired.
Sure.
Because it's a numbers game.
Absolutely.
But you came to my consciousness because you ended up on MSNBC.
Yeah.
Groundhog Day.
Yeah, so this is a recent development. I've partnered with MSNBC to do a featured cartoon. They have a new show called The Week with Joshua Johnson. That is on Saturdays and Sundays from 8 to 10 p.m. And an old friend of mine from the city is a producer on weekend primetime now. And he saw some of my cartoons and reached out and said, hey, would you be interested in finding a bigger audience for these? And I said, sure, of course. Isn't everyone? And he said, we have a new show. We're looking to get more exclusive content on it. And that was sort of his pitch. He was like, let's try it out for a few weeks and see what happens, and we'll go from there. My cartoons were not incredibly political before I got this gig. They were just funny observations. And for quarantine, it was very good and very bad for a cartoonist because there's so much shared experience. Everybody is really experiencing things at the same rate. So when I say something like, the nice thing about the relentless forward march of time is that my Amazon packages seem to arrive so quickly, that's something that everybody can get. At the end of the day, drawing people on the couch over and over and over again sort of became a little bit of a slog. So I was happy to move away from that kind of thing. So now I'm basically sending MSNBC 3 or 4 cartoons a week, and they'll pick one. And it is either featured as they go to commercial, or they'll feature it on their Twitter page. Last week was supposed to be the second week of this, and there was a pesky impeachment trial that got in the way. And so the show didn't air. So moving forward, we're going to see what happens.
So the first one was Groundhog Day, and it's the groundhog, and the caption is...
Sure, 6 more weeks. It's not like you had plans.
Right.
And then you had one out for a Valentine's Day. It was like a Wheel of Fortune type spinning wheel where the question is, why hasn't he called me? And 95% of the wheel is, he's been kidnapped. 10 or maybe 5% of the wheel is, he's just not that into you.
And it always happens to land on that 5%, doesn't it?
I have heard from New Yorker cartoonists that if they're regulars, they're expected to submit 10 cartoons a week. And out of those 10 submissions, they might get one in the mag. But are you ready for that kind of pressure?
No, absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
No,
well,
no.
Get ready.
So I do it. Much more casually. I probably make 4 or 5 a week.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Wow. And some are real garbage. You'll never see the ones that are a little bit more embarrassing. And it's just any person who spends a lot of time with something that came out of their brain ends up hating it by the end. Mm-hmm. And so you sort of have to move away from it for a second and look at it with fresh eyes the next day and ask yourself if it's really any good. But the nice thing about it is it's not like submitting a manuscript. If it's a piece of garbage, they swipe past it and go to the next one, and it takes 3 seconds out of their day. So
right. But I notice that a lot of them too are just a casual observation, a quip that many people have made, but the comedy is amplified by being illustrated. Putting it in the context of a little picture makes it so much funnier.
Yeah.
And as with The New Yorker, oh, that's the kind of thing I've said, but it's not funny until somebody isolates that and says, you know, that's funny, and illustrates it in that very offhanded, casual New Yorker magazine type way.
Yeah. Just,
for example, many couples getting married have quipped, we're going to make our friends spend money on us, but you've done a cartoon, man on bended knee, ring being proffered to delight a young woman, and he says, let's make our friends spend money on us.
Yeah.
And just, you know, very, very
great.
Funny. Or the job interview, the young man, the older man, it's you know, very corporate, very impressive qualifications, Mr. Thompson. It says here, you're my son. Which is, everyone's terror about how everyone else is getting a job.
Right, exactly.
Right.
I would like to jump in, though, and say one of the most delicious parts of your Instagram are the posts that you put along with the picture, just as anybody would pick a picture of something, their grandkids, and then they would have a little line about what we're looking at.
Yeah.
Well, you have the cartoon with the caption, and then you have another joke in the setup. It reminds me of a cartoonist who came out of Buffalo, Pulitzer Prize-winning Tom Tolles, who always had a little extra kicker. And that's what I love about your cartoons.
Thanks.
Or your gags.
Yeah.
The kicker.
Yeah, I like to set them up and think of it as like the opening line to a scene, and then think there's an old improv question that they ask that's, if this is true, then what else is true? And that's sort of the rule that I like to take. This is funny, what else could be funny in this world? And so you often get a little baker's dozen joke in the captions.
You know, I did want to say something though. A long time ago, I thought, well, I could be a New Yorker cartoonist if I could just draw. And then they came out with the contest where they give you the drawing. You don't have to draw. Here it
they
is.
They do.
Say something funny. And I was like, I got nothing. I got nothing.
You know what? That's so funny. With the New Yorker cartoon caption contest, I am always blown away by what people come up with, because for me, like, it's always the joke that comes first and then the image comes after it. My brain does not work the opposite way, where it shows you a funny image and then you come up with a caption. That's some reverse engineering that's really baffling to me.
Yeah, in the history of creativity, only Richard Rodgers could do that. You know, with Lorenz Hart, he wrote the music first and Hart wrote the lyrics, and with Oscar Hammerstein, the opposite. Amazing. So just intriguing how creativity does not stopped in your tracks from the momentum in one direction in acting, and you diverted it into something different and successful. We look for you on MSNBC, Saturdays and Sundays. The name of the show again?
The Week with Joshua Johnson.
The Week with Joshua Johnson. Jonathan, thank you so much for spending some time with Peter and me on Theater Talk.
Thank you, gentlemen, so much. It was great to talk to you.
For Theater Talk on WBFO,
I'm Peter Hall.
And I'm Anthony Chase.